Voices of guests, callers, and its host, John Zerzan. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of KWVA Eugene or anyone else.
Good evening. You're listening to Anarchy Radio on KWVA Eugene. We're going to start in just a couple of minutes, but how about starting off with a little John Coltrane to get you in the mood?
Indeed, Anarchy Radio for June 8th. Well, one thing that hasn't changed here, this is the third week in a row we have no telephone connection. If you were to call, there's no way to put it on the air. But this is 541-346-0645. If you want to just leave a message or an announcement or a question, you could do that. But we can't have any call-in type dialogue, alas. Another change, well, this is a change, actually. Tim is not going to be with us for a while, or not so consistently. He has to drive to Eugene, and he has to spend a lot of time editing the show, and we're going to just fall back, Carl and I, on our old mode, and just
Don't know what to do. What's going on?
Gee, where's Tim? Where's Joe? The usual craziness here. It's anyway, Tim will be probably videotaping shows once in a while, maybe even once a month. But
at his own leisure.
Isn't that amazing? Yes. Well, meanwhile, Carl is going to be a scofflaw and a shirker at the end of the month here. If you haven't heard me say it before, there will be no broadcast on June 29th because I'll be gone and Carl will be gone. Next week, the 15th, Catherine will be back, and that'll be cool. Yeah, I'm going to Ireland 2 weeks from tomorrow for a one-week thing, and kind of excited. I'm still a little bit...
You're going to come back as tan from Ireland?
Oh, right. Probably even more waterlogged than here, from what I hear. Is it true that it never stops raining in Ireland?
It's always raining somewhere in Ireland.
Worse than in England, I've heard. Well, where did I hear this? I saw this somewhere. George Bush now has a Facebook page.
Awesome.
Awesome, right. It makes me glad I don't have one myself. Although if I didn't have this show, maybe I would be blogging and Facebooking, and if I knew how to do those things.
I think it's against the Facebook terms of service to pretend to be somebody you're not on the internet. So he probably doesn't do his Facebook profile himself.
Gee.
He's got to have some lackey doing it for him.
That's pretty cynical outlook, Carl. He was filmed somewhere. I didn't actually hear him say it, but
he's the guy. He'd never had a computer in his office, did he?
Gee, he's rising in my estimation here a little bit. And then we got the RSS subscription query. Somebody very nicely asked me
why the hell you didn't have an RSS feed.
Yeah, and would I like one? And so that people could more readily get this program. And certainly I had no idea what he's talking about. So maybe get some help. Maybe Ben can, as we were saying. Well, onward. This is day 50 of the Gulf War apocalypse, disaster, cataclysm, catastrophe, whatever it is. And a few new developments. Gee, it turns out BP was lying about the existence of underwater plumes, these formations of oil beneath the surface. It's all on the surface. Well, it's completely wrong. It's a complete another lie. And the amount that's leaked is further stuff on that. They're siphoning some of it off, but it's coming out even faster. And let's see what else. Today it was announced, it was disclosed that there's a second rig unrelated to the Deepwater Horizon thing. Somewhere else it's been going on since late April in the Gulf of Mexico. Not as big as this huge one, but, you know, this is the thing that, I mean, it's not like, this has never happened before either. I saw some cable news thing, and the guy, some announcer, was from Florida. And he said, well, the tarballs, they've been tarballs since I was a little kid. You know, there's a tarball, you know. And meanwhile, a German biologist says that less than 1% of heavily oiled birds survive.
Oh, I believe it.
So, yeah, I think that's kind of well known.
And the other question is, where do they go once they get released? Mm-hmm. You know, even if they release them over on the Atlantic side of Florida, they're still going to home back into...
That figures, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they'd go home. And, whoa. So, the many articles about how long the spilled oil stays. And, you know, here's an interesting piece on the weekend in the New York Times. You know, this is getting through to people in different ways, I think. John Leland wrote a story called A Movement Prepares, Goodbye Limitless Oil, Hello Primitive Dystopia. And you know, we threw out on the show not long ago, whatever happened to peak oil? There were all these peak oil people and films and videos, peak oil, and then it seemed to disappear. At least it wasn't getting so much attention. Well, this guy Leland discloses that, and this doesn't just date from now, but I think it's being taken more seriously, that there, for example, he says the peak oil crowd is small but growing. It's not just health food stores and whoever else it might be, but there's actually a congressional peak oil caucus of a, I don't know how many, but it says a Democrat and a Republican formed it, and how, it's really, it's sunk in with various people that this whole thing, you know, the oil's going to run out, and what happens then? Where's going to, you know, food and everything else is going to be up in the air. I wrote him an email and I said, you could call it a dystopia, but another way to look at it is this is a liberating move, not the disastrous, unexpected part, for which people aren't prepared at all at the moment, I guess, but or not very prepared. But so in a line or two, I mentioned the primitivist anti-civilization point of view and where he could read about that, and he replied almost right away. And I think he kind of missed the point, because he said the article is about people that are hoping for the best but preparing for the worst. And I know that. I read the article. But the point is it the worst that the industrial model goes away? I mean, that's there's a lot more to it, potentially. Anyway, I might as well bring it to his attention that there's another way to look at it, even though we're all in the same plight. The same vulnerability. And let's see, this is just a couple of days ago. The Union Carbide people were finally found guilty, some of them, after more than 25 years. One of the eight defendants died over this long period of time, and the ones that were convicted are all Indian citizens. The main bad guy, the CEO of Union Carbide, Warren M. Anderson, went back to the U.S. When he was released on bail and has never made himself available for prosecution. That was the biggest. Union Carbide, 3,000 people died almost instantly, and eventually it was about 20,000 fatalities. The world's worst industrial disaster, the deadly gases that were released in the central Indian city of Bhopal. And it's all these things remind us of something. And the recently there's more attention to what had been going on for about 30 years, namely started by Texaco, which later merged with Chevron. It's known more by the name Chevron. I'm talking about the upper Amazon rainforest in Ecuador, and the widespread toxic contamination of all the drilling up there. That's another part of it. Meanwhile, Shell can't wait to begin drilling in the Arctic. It's kind of, I think it just opens eyes to the general situation. Not this spectacular thing is ultra ghastly in itself. But for example, yesterday, in Texas, a natural gas pipeline was ruptured and a giant explosion happened. No confirmed deaths. And today, another gas pipeline explosion. And apparently, they haven't confirmed the deaths, but there seem to be several in the same state. This one was up by Oklahoma, but two in 2 days. And in West Virginia, an abandoned coal mine blew up yesterday, and you know, and so it goes. We were in Alice and I were in Norway last month, and there was some reference. We were in this place just below Oslo in the Oslo Fjord waters, and there was some reference to the fjord, and as opposed to the Gulf of Mexico, and our host said all kinds of oil spills here in the Oslo Fjord. It's not like we're exempt, you know, nothing like the thing that's ongoing in the Gulf of Mexico, but still. And at the same time, I think this is a little bit hilarious, 6 months ago was the Copenhagen climate change summit called Copenhagen, and just the complete disaster there, the complete nothingness of all that. Well, they've people behind that, the negotiators are meeting in Bonn right now to try to get the process back on track. This year it's about restoring trust. Oh yeah, that'll work out all right. Yeah, and don't forget to vote for Obama. Yeah, people should really trust that process, that whole shell game. If it's even that. Well, I almost wish we did have the camera here right now, but I can describe two ads. They're very, very priceless. One is a full-page ad for Meredith, which is a publisher of about 10 magazines, monthly magazines oriented toward women. And, you know, it's the text, which is not very big, it's talking about their growth. The readership increased by 3.4 million women recently, and Meredith talks about weathering the economic storm, the recession, focusing on giving women information and so forth, and they're doing just fine. They're ranked number one in media companies to do business with, and kind of a, you might say it's a regular ad, but the big message, the big one-word thing in the middle of the page is, guess what? Sustainability. This has nothing to do with sustainability. They're not even bothering to lie about it. It's not even vaguely connected. I don't know, maybe it's just a kind of bittersweet joke. Sustainability means sustaining the wasting paper and growing and putting out this kind of pap junk for people, for women in this case. But sustainability, oh, I get it. And the other one, which is also quite priceless, from Siemens, the big European techno consortium. And this is about technology, of course. Can one technology sustain our entire way of life? This is a magazine ad in This Week magazine, a full-page ad. And then it goes on to say, in bold letters, sustainability is more than a single technology. So it's a whole ensemble of technologies, but somehow it turns out to be sustainability. That's just, you know, it's just an amazing twist. It makes your head spin, or it made my head spin. What are you talking about? How do you get from more technology to sustainability? They don't really explain that too well, I'm afraid. Well, this probably has something to do with sustainability, or maybe it doesn't. Late last week, China says it'll tighten controls on rare minerals. They're going to, China has been using some of the most environmentally damaging techniques, causing environmental ruin and devastating pollution. They're talking about these rare earths, these rare minerals, elements that are needed for hybrid cars, wind turbines, efficient light bulbs. And that's kind of interesting to think about, the connection. Somehow it turns out clean and sustainable and green. As they strip the last, strip the earth of the last remaining things and have done it in a horrendously anti-sustainable way. And how do you replace something? It's like extinction. When they complete the extinction, then it's, then maybe they can say it's sustainable, which, would be remarkable, but I guess we're in a newspeak, era. Where, I don't know, maybe nobody even notices what is stated in the language. Well, today, on with for another minute or so here, the whole terrain of industrialism, industrial life, the world of factories, Nigeria, in northern Nigeria, scores of children suffering from lead poisoning. It's already killed more than 160 lead, which has contaminated water supplies in at least 6 villages. And right here, well, not right here, but in southern Oregon, northern California, this is in the news in the past few days, the Blue Ledge Mine, high in the Applegate River drainage, pretty much right on the line, the state line there. This is a copper mine that operated in the last century. It is leaching zinc, copper, cadmium, lead, arsenic, and sulfuric acid. And that gets back to the question, is there any mining that is somehow, not damaging or unsustainable, maybe? But we have protections in a way that an outfit called Belly Armor, this is a good one, I thought. They make blankets and t-shirts for expectant mothers from a conductive textile made of fibers and metal. And the point of it is, you put this on or drape it over yourself to keep the electromagnetic radiation from your wireless devices, such as your laptop, from zorching your baby, your pregnant mother-to-be. Yeah, it's got a great photo here. You got the lead blankets that you put on, and you get an X-ray or teeth X-ray or something. It doesn't give you a great sense of comfort or there's nothing wrong with this. That's why you need this giant shield here that you can hope you're okay with. Well, there's been a whole lot of stuff just to kind of finish the techno swing here. Kind of amazing, and I guess, I don't know, pretty coincidental at the same time. There's, for one thing, a new book. This is by Nicholas Carr. Is the Internet Ruining Our Minds? That's not the name of it. It's the name of one of the reviews. His book is called The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. one needn't go on into the details. Brand new book. How it changes the brain, literally. And then we move on to the question, I guess, of why are people so captivated in the immersive digital thing? And one answer, and Alice had some good points on this, there's the illusion of control, the illusion of mastery, the illusion of connectedness. And maybe it works because the whole thing is an illusion. The whole thing is unreal. You know, that's the totality, this techno-industrial culture, in some places more than others. So, you could contrast that and point out, well, it's all simulation, and what is so fascinating about it? But, the point is, what is the context? Maybe that helps explain it. And yesterday, I swear this is about 3 pages worth of articles in the New York Times, several articles on the front page, hooked on gadgets and paying a mental price, constant use takes a toll on concentration and family life. Very long stories. More Americans sense a downside to an always plugged in existence. An ugly toll of technology, : impatience and forgetfulness. Kind of amazing. Because of course, that's exactly the order of the day. I mean, it's not like this is some exotic, obscure thing we need to worry about. I mean, it's the definition of modern culture. And yet, here's an onslaught of questioning, and not just the book I just cited, this Nicholas Carr book, but it's kind of striking. And the whole thing moves along. Oh, I just want to, it's kind of dreary. Let me just, we can go to a break here in a minute. I wanted to give credit. I like to give credit where credit is due. I enjoy it, regardless of if I've had criticism in other ways. Current issue of Orion Magazine, the May-June issue. This is, I'm referring to Derek Jensen's continuing column called Upping the Stakes. This one, the current one, is his column, this particular one is called High on Progress, What Will Be Left When We Finally Come Down? And he's talking about the culture's addiction to progress and how powerful it is. And, you know, my first thought is, well, we use that metaphor of addiction. It almost, there very often stays on that terrain of personal consumption habits. The addict is an individual, and, you know, there's a danger there because the huge thing is to just talk about how much you can recycle or, you know, trivia like that. But actually, this is not what he's getting at all. He says, for example, I just want to read a little bit of this because I think it's quite good. And it's very specific. That's what I personally like so much, is when you get specific and concrete and kind of turn the rhetoric down, the easy bromides and so forth. He says, in part, progress is polar bears swimming hundreds of miles to ice floes that have melted away till finally they can swim no more. Progress is the ability of fewer and fewer people to control more and more people and to destroy more and more of the world. Progress is a god. Progress is God. Progress is killing the world. And then, even more specifically, he says, this culture's addiction to progress runs far deeper than any individual's chemical addiction. Progress is computers, which require mining, manufacturing, and infrastructures, energy infrastructures, and are used far more efficiently by those in power than by us. Progress is the internet, which allows for instantaneous communication with distant loved ones, and which requires mining, manufacturing, and energy infrastructures, and is used far more effectively by those in power than by us. Progress is supermarkets, which require industrial food production, which in turn requires mining, manufacturing, and agricultural, chemical, and energy infrastructures, and is controlled by ever fewer giant corporations, and just runs it down. This is what progress is. So, good column. Very good, strong, well done column. Well, we should take a musical break, maybe? Yeah. Just slide on into that. Stay with us, please. Thank you. Anarchy Radio is an editorial collage made up of the voices of guests, callers, and its host, John Zerzan. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of KWVA, Eugene, or anyone else. I love that Richard Twardzik track. That just really grabs me, the crutch for the crab. Well, Alice called in during the break, and she's got a very excellent description of people that are so very wired, and I was thinking of the piece I referred to very recently, the college student and who wrote about the fact that at her college no one speaks to each other. They pass each other, but they're so wired that they don't actually waste any time saying hello or contacting each other in real time or at a real place. And a good name for that is techno squalor, because it really is squalid. That's a degraded way to be. And so I guess it's a little wonder that it breaks out these little batch of stories I mentioned in
hey, John,
the Times.
We got a caller who wanted to know more about the article and how the internet is changing our brains.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to pass on that information on the phone.
Thanks. Okay. Thank you, Carl. Okay, I think we want to be upbeat, so let's have some action news. In Loveland, Colorado, this is the middle of May, but it was only disclosed a day or so ago, or, well, last week, at the field office of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or better known as ICE. This building was attacked, every window and door was shattered. That sounds familiar. Did that sneak in there? Did I already disclose that last week? I don't know. I'm sorry if I did. Maybe I didn't. Well, this is late May, but this just came to light today. More riots and resistance in China. In this case, Taiyuan City in China's Shaanxi province. Over the latest, it's just a chronic thing, people being violently evicted, their homes demolished, people driven off the land. Once again, one of the cardinal original traits or marks of civilization itself, quite a set to. This is just a totally chronic thing. And it's a good thing there are departments of sociology. The Department of Sociology at Tsinghua University in Beijing recently reported, in terms of this phenomenon, the growing social disputes stemming from violations of human rights and property rights, predominantly related to forced evictions, subsequent demolitions, and unpaid wages, are described as the leading causes of instability in China today. Well, it's a good thing we have sociologists to explain that something so opaque and mysterious. Yeah, this happened on Saturday. Let's get closer to the present here. And this happened in a town near the Moroccan border. This is Algeria. 300 vehicles were torched when a 19-year-old Moroccan student was killed in a border chase. A violent response. This teenager refused to submit to customs inspection and was chased. His car collided head-on with a vehicle in which customs was blocking his path. He was killed instantly. And so thousands, or nearly 1,000 inhabitants of this region, is a running battle. This was Saturday night, Sunday morning, and something like 317 cars went up in flames, including some from the customs department. This spread. Anyway, out of that tragedy. And Memorial Day. Yeah, Memorial Day. Well, one thing that happened at upbeat here, from Oregon to Minnesota to Ohio, vandals trampled on Old Glory. Over the Memorial Day weekend, in one Ohio town alone, approximately 25 American flags were found set ablaze. And in Portland, by the way, thought this was kind of curious. There was a statement on Portland Indie Media by a spokesperson for the Veterans for Peace outfit, and, you know, referring to memorials for veterans, deceased veterans. And this person says, in my opinion, the taking of human life is not an honorable profession, though nationalities are built on this assumption, and it is arguably a necessary function of the state. Well, exactly. That's, an anarchist would kind of, yeah. So you subscribe to nationalities and nationalism and the state, so why do that? That's not a given, is it? And Saudi Arabia, there was, yeah, a recent story that I shared about women fighting back against the vicious puritanical religious police in Saudi Arabia. Here's another one. In an unprecedented outburst toward Saudi Arabia's religious police, a married woman shot at several officers in a patrol car after she was caught in a, quote, illegal seclusion with another man. She shot at the officers to distract them and allow the man to escape instant detection. So it looks like there's people who are fed up, a bit of an outrage over the organized misogyny there. And from last week, prisoners at the Steenokerzeel Detention Center, and I don't know what part of France this is located, but there was a rebellion, a whole dormitory went up in flames. And that reminds me, there is a very big, fat, new, brand new issue of Fire to the Prisons, issue number 9, summer 2010. For us, revolt needs no other justification. It is a huge compilation, primarily. It's, geez, it's 120 pages, something like that. A very significant brand new issue. Locally, right here in Eugene, you could get it at Bad Egg Books. Rioting in another outburst in France, the Noyer-Renard housing, I think this is a housing development in a section of Paris, southern Paris, a child riding a mini bike, two motorcycle cops ran into this kid, turned into a riot. 50 cops showed up immediately, and there was the cops were shooting flashball grenades. A mother on the scene said it was like the apocalypse. An officer replied, explaining that a mother had bitten the leg of a member of law enforcement. Police were surrounded, and so on. And in response to the murders of the people coming in, who attempted to come into Gaza, the humanitarian flotilla, last week in Bristol, England, in honor of that, or in solidarity to that, bank windows were smashed and painted, and political party offices were smashed up. Territorial Army cars had their windscreens smashed. These attacks were, again, in solidarity with those people. More dams, more resistance to dams. For example, the Papagayo River in southern Mexico is slated to get a massive hydro dam, which would dislocate around 25,000 mainly indigenous campesinos. There have been continuous roadblocks to keep the dam construction workers away. And just a shout out, there will be an update, I think, very soon with more particulars, but the Wildritz Feral Futures for 2010, which is going to happen in about 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks, week and a half, in the mighty and wild San Juan Mountains of Southwest Colorado. You could just check that out, and also stay tuned for how to get there. Predictably, they're not giving a big old roadmap so the fat arm of the law can't be totally prepared to mess with people. Anarchy Camp, there's another thing happening outdoors in preparation for the for resistance against the IMF demonstrations. The IMF is meeting this fall in D.C., in Washington, D.C. There's going to be a second annual Anarchy Summer Camp in Northern Virginia, August 6th to the 9th, just 2 months away. Okay, so there's always stuff going on, and that's just a tiny sampling. I don't think I even brought in ALF information there this time. Okay, well, again, if anybody had a brief question or brief comment or an announcement, 541-346-0645. This is another, it's disturbing news all around the place, it's obvious, but here's an interesting thing, a troubling and unexpected rise in suicides. This was disclosed on the weekend. Rise in suicides among middle-aged American, this is continuing to increase. Historically, the oldest segment of the suicide-prone in the U.S. is those 80 and older, but now this startling rise puts the people in who are middle-aged up above that, and these are figures that the latest figures have to do with 2007. Higher incidence of depression among baby boomers, for one thing, and so we're talking about the total numbers in the U.S., something like 25,000 to 30,000 suicides a year. And what do we make of that? And, you know, I have referred to the spate of suicides at Westcom in China, which is the biggest jobber of parts for iPhones, for HP, and these other big outfits, for Apple, Dell, and so forth. And they've doubled the wages because this is such a problem. Also in China, guns are extremely rare, and the horrific number of massacres of young school children with knives and other implements, especially in the last couple of months. Well, last Wednesday, there was a gun attack at a courthouse in Hunan province. Rampage kills three rare instances of gun violence where private gun ownership is quite illegal. And the big one in terms of shooting this past week, the gunman in Northwest England who killed 12 up in the beautiful Lake District, I've never been there, a seemingly random day of mayhem by a cab driver. And once again, this is so eerily familiar, he never had so much as an argument, said family members. No mental health problems, he was never on any medication, and gunned down 12 people and then killed himself. Worst mass shooting since 96. And one more thing, closer to home on this very disturbing topic. This was yesterday. Yes, a gunman shot and killed his wife outside a South Florida restaurant where she worked, then targeted women inside, killing three others. There are seven, there were three who were in critical condition, so the number of fatalities may rise. He only shot women, he passed up males. Pretty sad in itself. And my point here is this doesn't even make the news anymore. This was not in the New York Times. This was not in our local paper, Register Guard, here in Eugene. That's, you know, that just testifies how this is pretty much just a daily thing. Five dead, possibly more. You know, no huge reason why somebody with whatever gripe would do this, and it just keeps happening. Yeah, it reminds me of my little communication with the Washington Post editor, and I wrote a one-pager just perfect column size after they solicited something, didn't specify what, and the guy just flipped. No one could understand this. I can't understand this. My editors won't understand this. Well, very straightforward, very simple. It's just ask some questions and also quickly detailed the rise, the empirical rise in the U.S. of these shootings, how they didn't used to happen, now they, when they started, and how they're picking up steam, and nothing too obscure or academic or jargonistic or anything like that. He just went kind of bananas about it, and, you know, then why are you asking me? Why don't you ask anyone? You know, would be the other way to say it. Well, here's kind of a cool thing. Outdoor bacteria can make you smarter and happier. It turns out that, according to the Sage Colleges in Troy, New York, they did a study and located a natural soil bacterium called Mycobacterium vaccae. Maybe I'm pronouncing that right. And that is, it has mildly antidepressant qualities. I guess that's the best way to put it. And so it's one reason why to be outside in the dirt makes you feel better. Puts you in touch with the real world. And it's kind of neat. And it's, you know, one also thinks of the, if you have a more and more artificial and sterile environment, you don't have resistance to other bacteria because you're being sealed off from them. That's another part, which is not part of this research, but yeah, I thought that was a nice little thing to hear about. Well, I hate to keep talking, but we can't get any calls. I do think, I don't know why I think this, but next week that, what do you think, Carl? Could happen, huh?
Yeah, I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Mm-hmm. So that we might have some dialogue. Well, there's another, this is the latest thing about the global colony collapse disorder, which is wiping out bees worldwide, the huge die-off of bees. And this latest thing, the reviewer, a study by the World Organization for Animal Health. Well, really nothing new. It has to do with pesticides, industrial impact, and poor nutrition because of monocrops. There's no flowers, and where you got monocrops. It's in the past 3 years, it's, and the figures are higher in other places, but around 30% declines each year. Mysterious decimation of bee populations, Europe, Japan, U.S., and sometimes it's as much as 90%. Not a good sign. Let's see. There was an international conference about the U.N.'s effort to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and if we could stop the deforestation, of course, the forests absorb these gases. Well, it was in the latest edition of the journal Science, a study reports that the carbon emissions eliminated through reducing the deforestation are canceled out by the fires that have increased. It turns out that if you don't cut down the woods, they're more apt to burn because the hotter temperatures are drying out the rainforest. That's probably the biggest factor, it seems. And the fire is not a very good thing for the global warming in two or three obvious ways. There is another big international conference on climate change in Malaysia currently, climate change and the food crisis. And there's one more. This is not, you know, this is kind of, you think kind of obvious, but I guess it's good that this is being brought out in a detailed, systematic way. Namely, that industrial agriculture and the global food system are kind of negative, and going back to traditional horticultural methods is the answer, not the Green Revolution, the big urge, the big surge of high-tech agriculture going back to the 60s and now culminating in, of course, GM organisms and all that stuff. But this small farmer-centered thing with its various methods and greater biodiversity, which could go in the direction of non-domestication. That's potentially pointing in that direction. And speaking of that area of Southeast Asia, there was a story just about a week ago. A woman, a 29-year-old woman in Cambodia, Rochom Pimieng, first disappeared into the jungle when she was small. She was, quote, discovered in early 2007 and reunited with her family. However, attempts to reintegrate her have failed. She doesn't like domesticated life. And those 18 years living in a dense forest is more appealing, and she returned to it after struggling to adapt to society, according to the story in the late May, The Telegraph of UK. Domestication, another thing about domestication, this is kind of interesting, kind of sad, and thinking of Ginger, our wonderful dog Ginger. This is, let's see, I think this is today, yes, from the Discovery outfit. Dogs are now so dependent upon people that they fail certain basic intelligence tests. They have lost a significant amount of their problem-solving skills. So the headline of the story is Dogs Dumbed Down by Domestication. Too dependent to solve their problems. Domestication makes you stupid. I added that part. But we know that it is strictly a problem of capitalism. All of these changes. Arun Gupta in the current issue of Z Magazine has an article called Geoengineering the Planet, Corporate Remaking of the Earth's Atmosphere. Of course, it's just, if it weren't for corporations, let's not think about the rest of it. It's much, much deeper mainsprings of industrialism and mass production and domestication and civilization. No. Or as someone named Allergic wrote in for Anarchist News last week, BP were all downstream, referring to, of course, the British Petroleum's oil cataclysm, how this is a degradation of life. And of course, it is capitalism, capitalist system, capitalist madness. once again, good old strictly Marxist parameters. So if it was socialism, it'd all be different, I guess, somehow. Well, the last paragraph, the author is somebody named Olaya Kraft. Probably a joke of some kind. It's the last paragraph. Instead of a system that puts profits before people and the environment, we need something new, something that has not been tried before, a system that holds the planet and life on it in the highest regard, etc. That, you know, there's certain distancing there, I guess, perhaps, from the left, because if you say something that has not been tried before, that's, I don't know, maybe there's a little promise there. Maybe that's not just anti-capitalism, because that hasn't worked. That's that ain't enough. That's not getting to the basics, I do not think. Well, let's see. I ain't got a whole lot of stuff on health, but I think it's not so uplifting. again. Catherine will be down here from Portland next week, and I sure hope we can oblige by having a phone that connects to the the actual broadcasting of the program. And yeah, Tim won't be around so much anymore, but we're back in our old groove, and I hope to have some other guests later, including Cliff at some point or another, and we'll see who else, and maybe mix it up a little. And thank you for listening. I think we'll tune out and hope to catch you next week.
Mm-hmm.